seated. The first case to be heard this morning is number 2012-957. Kanata versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision. Here arguing on behalf of the appellant Board of Education, Mr. Hinkle.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the Supreme Court and the Master Commissioner, I'm Kevin Hinkle here on behalf of the appellant Orange City School District. The record in this case shows that the property owner filed a complaint for tax year 2009 seeking a decrease. Record also indicates that complaints were filed for each of 2010 as well as 2011 by the property owner. 2009 case went to hearing before the Board of Revision on appeal to the BTA and before this board on appeal. The 2010 and 2011 complaints were dismissed by the Board of Revision, and a hearing was not held on those two complaints. The first proposition of law that I would like to address
is... Let me ask you, was that a triennium? Was the 09 the first year of...
2009 was the first year of the triennium. The first issue we want to address is our proposition is the Board of Tax Appeal erred, and they adopted the appraiser's valuation, and the error is that it wasn't probative or competent evidence, as well as it had not been supplemented by any testimony. What had occurred at the Board of Tax Appeals is that the only thing that occurred there was the appraisal that had been part of the record already, as it was appeared at the Board of the appraiser appeared and testified at the Board of Revision. That was actually introduced as Exhibit A at the Board of Tax Appeals. It was already a part of the record. There was no further evidence.
Was there the actual written report in the transcript certified by the BOR?
It is my understanding, yes. Okay. And so, and no further testimony was, no testimony was provided, just an exhibit. The appraiser did not appear. At the Board of Revision, the appraiser appeared. There was cross-examination. The Board of Revision ignored the appraiser and filed in its determination of value, stated comp sales was the only explanation given by the Board of Revision.
But they adopted the auditors.
They adopted the auditors. That's correct. So as the matter goes up to the BTA, there's no testimony, and also, as the Board of Tax Appeals opinion provides, that the audio tape was not provided by the County Board of Revision. So they had no record of the testimony that was provided there.
And there was no written transcript.
And no written transcript was submitted. So it is a position of the appellant school board that at that point the Board of Tax Appeals has a duty pursuant to the law to review the entire record and to take action to either secure the record or to provide that there's other testimony given to supplement the record, which there was none. I point out a quote from the case of from the Supreme Court in the case of Columbus City School District versus Franklin County Board of Revision, 90 Ohio State 564, in quoting from the dissent by Justice Stratton. In order to do so, the BTA needed the full and complete record of the proceedings before the BOR. The Board of Education, as appellant, was required to provide the BTA with the complete record in order to demonstrate the lack of evidence, in that case, to support the BOR's valuation. However, the Board did not provide the BTA with a complete copy of the record before the BOR. So in this instance, as we take this matter, the Board of Tax Appeals has the duty under the case law from the Supreme Court to hear the entire matter with taking into account all of the evidence. All of the evidence includes the record before the Board of Revision. If the full record of the Board of Revision is not provided, then the BTA necessarily cannot consider all of the evidence which should be before it.
Now, let me ask you, at the Board of Revision, did the Board of Education appear and cross-examine the appraiser?
Yes, they did. The record indicates that the Board of Education both appeared. They also provided comp sales. The record will show there was a spreadsheet of, I'd say, 10 to 12 sales together with copies of the auditor cards regarding all those sales. So the Board of Education had cross-examined the appraiser at that, to the extent of cross-examination allowed there.
Now, at the BTA, was there an actual hearing at which Exhibit A was introduced? Or?
The hearing that occurred was opened with, there was a hearing. The only appearance was made by the attorney for the property owner, who also was the husband of the property owner. There were no witnesses present. He did not testify as a witness. He only was a lawyer. And all that happened there was he handed in and introduced into evidence Exhibit A. The appraiser was not there. Nobody there was to object, and that was entered into evidence.
So it's clear that there's no objection at the BTA to accepting Exhibit A.
That's correct. And given that the appraisal is part of the record from the Board of Revision, it is our position it was already evidence. It was already in the record. Exhibit A just added to the voluminous of the file. It is our position that the Board of Tax Appeals was under duty at that point to either require supplemental testimony to be given by the appraiser, or alternatively to order the Board of Revision to comply with its statutory duty. And if I can, I'll move on to the second proposition of law, and that regards the carryover rule. So in the 9 complaint was filed, the 10 complaint was filed, the 11 complaint was filed. 10 and 11 each were dismissed by the Board of Revision. Matter comes up on appeal. Board of Education files a motion that the 10 filing and the 11 filing cuts off the carryover from 9 to the 10 and 11, which is the rest of the triennium. And with respect to that, there are a number of cases which have considered what to do. The first case is the Inner City, referred to as the Inner City case of Columbus, Ohio Supreme Court 87, Ohio State 3rd, 305, and that indicates that a fresh complaint cuts off the carryover. Another case that deals with the filing of complaints is the Elkham Metals case that considered 5719A as opposed to 5719D. And in that case, they said a filed complaint is a filed complaint. We also have the Fogg case, and the Fogg case uses the term procedurally valid complaint. And a procedurally valid complaint cuts off the carryover. And then finally, we have the Cincinnati School District case, 74 Ohio State 3rd, 639. And that talks of a valid new complaint filed and determined by the Board of Revision. And on that Cincinnati case, that case was a filing in the second triennium. So that case certainly would have had a valid complaint because it was in a different triennium, which is permitted as a complaint without looking to that, whether there's a second complaint. So as we state in our brief, that applying Fogg as procedurally valid, that complaint filed was procedurally valid. It allowed the Board of Revision to go forward with its procedure, which was to identify the property owner. The amount of the complaint was below more than $17.5 in assessed value. It could give notice. And as you go back to the case law, when it went to the Supreme Court, established the rule of core of procedural efficiency. And you look at that and say, what does a procedurally valid complaint mean? It was procedurally valid at the Board of Revision. It is our position that the Fogg case requires that if it's a procedurally valid complaint at the Board of Revision level to allow them to carry out their statutory duties.
But the two complaints in this case were dismissed because of the triennial rule, right?
That's correct. They were in the same triennium.
And your position is that in spite of that jurisdictional dismissal, that the complaints nonetheless would cut off the carryover.
That's correct. And our point is that, you know, the Faw case did to say jurisdictionally defective. There's other cases that, in Elkham, they talked about jurisdictionally defective. But under 5719, the term procedurally valid, we've not found a case that deals with that. And certainly this jurisdictional defective nature, that had been around the Supreme Court, had been around the BTA for years. Now it's a point as to that a new term is brought up, and it's whose procedure. And finally, what we would request, if in the event that the other item would be, is that the BTA at that point, there was only testimony given as to 2009. If it wanted to assert a carryover to 10 and 11, it should have taken evidence to 10 and 11 because there's no evidence as to 10 and 11. So we'd ask this court, as one of the remedies would be to remand it to the Board of Tax Appeals to take evidence for 2010 and 11, or for the BTA, as it's done in other cases, order its remand by the BTA to the Board of Revision to take that testimony.
But let me ask you, with 5715.19D, doesn't that require a carryover of the value even without additional evidence for the later years?
It does, except in the instance here where there's been other complaints filed, it puts those at issue. A property owner, if they want a different value for each year, they have to file a complaint, and that's what was done here. Okay. If I may, if I could reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hinkle. Mr. Lindholm.
Thank you. May it please the court, Jason Lindholm with Siegel Jennings on behalf of the appellee property owner, Jill K. Cannata, trustee. As Mr. Hinkle alluded to, there's two principal issues before this court this morning, and that's the de novo review of the BTA and its duty to perform an independent analysis, and whether invalid complaints filed in subsequent years in a triennial cut off the carry forward of a valid complaint. Both of these issues have been addressed by this court. The case law is clear that the BTA must conduct a de novo review of the evidence before it in situations similar to the case at bar. Following its new review of the evidence, the BTA then has wide latitude to decide whether to adopt an appraisal or other evidence when determining the value of real property. Here, the case law is also clear that the BOR's decision does not carry a presumption of validity. The BTA has an obligation to independently weigh and evaluate the evidence before it and make its own independent determination of value. And in this particular case, there was appraisal evidence entered at the Board of Revision level.
You've got a written appraisal report.
Yes.
But no testimony from the appraiser at the BTA.
Correct.
And it's known from the record that there was testimony from the appraiser at the BOR.
Yes.
And cross-examination.
Yes.
And the BOR rejected the appraisal.
The BOR rejected the appraisal, but if you look at the oral hearing worksheet from the Board of Revision, they really give no reasoning as to why they rejected the appraisal. So there's really no detail as to how the Board of Revision made their decision. And with this evidence in the record that tended to negate the auditor's value, the BTA was then under a duty to do a de novo review and to independently weigh the evidence and make an independent determination of value on appeal. So the evidence that was entered into the record at the Board of Revision was a straightforward appraisal of a residential property. This was not a complicated appraisal. This was not a 100-page appraisal. I believe it was probably under 20 pages. It was prepared by an appraiser who was state licensed with many years of experience, who had appeared and testified before the Board of Revision and the Board of Tax Appeals for many years. By the standards of what the BTA sees, they with complex commercial appraisals, I think that it was a very straightforward review that they needed to conduct with this evidence. It contained comparable properties and adjustments to those comparables, as well as other information needed to determine a value for the subject property. The BTA then performed its duty by reviewing this appraisal evidence and making its decision. And of course, this would certainly not be the only time that the Board of Revision would disagree with the decision of the Board of Revision on appraisal evidence and determine a different value than what the BOR held. The Board of Education and the county are submitting that the BTA can adopt an appraisal value without testimony from an appraiser, but there is no such requirement that I'm aware of. We cited a case, Hilliard City Schools, in our brief, where the court adopted appraisal evidence. This court adopted appraisal evidence without the testimony of an appraiser.
The troubling feature here, though, is that there was that testimony, there was that cross-examination, and there was a tribunal that declined to adopt, and there are legal requirements that all of that material be certified to the BTA.
Correct. And the BTA has they have authority under a case law and under 5717.01 to ask for additional evidence if they want it. They knew what the record was in the case. They didn't ask for additional evidence. They didn't request any additional evidence from the county. It's the BOR's duty to provide that audio tape. They did not do it. Here the county, representing their client, could have furnished that audio tape to the BTA. They did not appear at the hearing. Neither did counsel for the Board of Education appear at the hearing to object to the fact that there was no additional testimony being furnished. That would have been the time to lodge that objection. They did not do so. The hearing examiner had the appellant's counsel at that time at the hearing. He also lived at the subject property. He described the property, and he also described the appraisal. At that time, the BTA had the opportunity to ask any questions they wanted to ask, and they did, and apparently felt that the record was complete enough to make a decision in the case. And again, it was not a complicated appraisal. There was not any additional evidence entered into the record to, there was no sale, there was no other, any other information for the BTA to evaluate aside from this, what we would believe to be a straightforward residential appraisal. And it's, as this court knows, the BTA has wide latitude in its discretion on what evidence to adopt and what evidence not to adopt. This court has never wanted to be a super BTA on matters of the weight of the evidence. And here, the BTA was certainly had the authority and the obligation to review that appraisal, and they did so.
What about the idea that under these statutes, it would appear that it's the Board of Revision or the auditor who has the duty to certify all of this record to the BTA? But since here there's an appellant, your client is the appellant at the BTA, to make sure that this evidence gets before the BTA, since it's your own appraisal, shouldn't the court perhaps look to that rule under these circumstances?
Well, I think it's the appellant property owner at that time, they took the risk as to what the BTA would do. And we did not represent them at that time, so I'm not sure what if they knew how complete the record was at that time. I think that they felt with the appraisal in front of the BTA that that provided sufficient evidence for them to make a decision. There were adjustments, again, to the comparables. There was all the information needed that would typically be included in a residential real estate appraisal for the BTA to make their decision. And I think at that time, the property owner's counsel and the property owner felt comfortable enough with that evidence to provide it to the BTA and render a decision. The BTA could have found the opposite, and there was that risk, but they did elect to take that evidence. And again, the Board of Education and the county could have appeared at the hearing and made objections to this. If they felt it was a risk, they could have subpoenaed the appraiser for additional testimony. They could have...
Was there any written filing by the Education?
There was no written filing that I'm aware of. The only written filing that I'm aware of was a motion to constrict jurisdiction over the 2009 tax year. There was no written filing that objected to the appraisal evidence. In fact, there's been no objection or really any discussion of that appraisal evidence itself by the BOE or the county, only really the BTA's authority to make a decision in this case, which we would argue they certainly had the authority and the discretion to make a decision in this case. Again, the BTA was aware of the record from the BOR at the time of the BTA hearing, had no issue at that time with taking the appraisal in as evidence, had the opportunity to ask questions of appellant's counsel at the hearing, and did so. And here, it's the position on the first issue of the property owner that what this really comes down to is a question of whether or not the BTA had the duty to independently weigh the evidence before it through a de novo review. And the longstanding case law from this court shows it's clear that they do have that duty. They exercised it in this case, given that the evidence submitted negated the auditor's value. And the issue of the weight of the evidence is to be determined by the BTA. There's a long line of cases that discuss the wide discretion that they have. And here, when you're dealing with what is basically uncomplicated evidence, they certainly had wide discretion to decide whether or not to take that appraisal or whether or not to take that appraisal. I would also submit that the BTA sees hundreds, if not into the thousands, of appraisals each year. Whether or not a value should be assigned by virtue of an uncomplicated residential real estate appraisal prepared by an experienced appraiser is up to the BTA and within their discretion. The BTA believed that the appraisal was probative evidence of value, and on the first issue, the appellee would respectfully request that that decision be upheld by this court. And moving on to the second issue, regarding the carryover into 2010 and 2011. Again, 2012 is a reappraisal period in Cuyahoga County. And so a 2009 complaint should carry forward into 10 and 11, barring any additional circumstances. And it's the position of the appellee, based on those decisions of the court outlined in the appellee's brief, that complaint should carry forward into 2010, 2011. And as the case law stands right now, it is clear, and it provides simplified guidance to boards of revision and to the Board of Tax Appeals as to what should and shouldn't carry forward. Unless the complaints in a subsequent triennial are valid under the complaint filing exceptions as laid out by statute, later complaints do not affect the carry forward of the value into later years. And this was decided by the Cincinnati School District case, which was then cited in the AERC Sawmill Village case, which dealt on point with the carryover provision. And that language talked about a valid new complaint. And any way you characterize these complaints filed in 2010, 2011, they're defective. They're not valid. There was already a 2009 complaint pending. There was no, unless one of the exceptions, the enumerated exceptions, were listed on the complaint, there was no reason to file those complaints. They're not valid and should not affect the carry forward. The BTA now interprets this way. There are some former cases, and some of them are cited by the appellants, but that's not the current state of the law. And the current state of the law discusses and cites the Cincinnati School District case, as well as the ARC case, and then you have Fogg, Akron, and also the Apple case as well. And it would be the position of the property owner that the appellants are complicating the issue with regards to definitions of filing and so forth here. And you have a workable standard now, and changing that standard would cause confusion at the Board of Revision level and at the BTA level as well. It's very simple. It's either if there's no intervening reappraisal or if there's no new valid complaint, that original complaint that's valid carries through. It's a good standard, and again, it's workable, and to change it would only complicate matters for the administrative agencies involved in these cases. And to summarize, any complaint that's invalid should not affect the carry forward of an original complaint that is valid. based on the recent decisions of this court. These cases were also, some of the cases were cited, such as Elka Metals, were decided well before these cases that were decided by the court on this issue came out. And in fact, in the ARC Sawmill Village case, they cited the Cincinnati School District case regarding a valid new complaint. And again, it's the position of the property owner that the issue is simplified, it's workable. To change it now would be unfair not only to those involved in situations such as the property owner, but would complicate matters procedurally before the Board's Revision Board of Tax Appeals. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lindholm. Mr. Hinkle, you've reserved 3 minutes and 31 seconds for rebuttal.
I better move quick. Thank you. I'd like to quote from the BTA case. So the BTA case at footnote 2, quote, we note that the statutory transcript does not contain an audio recording of the BOR hearing, indicating it is not available. We remind the county appellees of their duty to certify a complete transcript of the proceedings before the BOR, period. CRC 5717.01, Ohio Administrative Code 5717-1-09, parens B, Vandalia Butler City Schools District Board of Education, 130 Ohio State, 3rd, 291. Now, turning to that Vandalia case, which was cited in that footnote, if I may, to just quote from that case, it states, quote, at footnote 1, a board of revision must, quote, take full minutes of all evidence given before the board, comma, and it may cause the same to be taken in shorthand and extended in typewritten form, end quote. 5715.08. When a board revision elects to preserve the hearing in form of minutes without preparing a transcription or maintaining an audio record of the proceedings, that decision potentially affects the ability of the BTA to evaluate the evidence presented to the board of revision, since the BTA will have a mere summary rather than the actual testimony. This case goes on to further state, failure to certify the entire evidentiary record, and I'm quoting, failure to certify the entire evidentiary record may prejudice the interest of the proponents of admitted items, comma, and therefore, comma, boards of revision should take care to comply with the statutory duty to certify the entire record. Entire is in italics. On remand, the BTA will confront the question whether to order that the appraisal report be certified by the Board of Revision. So in this case, the BTA goes on that to state that they remind the county appellees. That's all they do is remind. And we've got the Vandalia case, which is a 2011 case from this Supreme Court that uses the quoted language that I've supplied to you. It further goes on cite and states, make statements such as, the BTA's duty, as previously discussed, is to reach its own independent judgment based on its weighing of the evidence contained in the brackets, Board of Revision, bracket transcript. In this instance, you know, the statutory duty of the Board of Revision is to provide this. The BTA's statutory duty is to consider the whole record, and as this case provided in Vandalia, which includes the Board of Revision transcript, that was not present here.
But, of course, you know, whether it may well be true that the Board of Revision has these duties, the question we're confronted with is what to do about the situation now. And I guess the troubling feature here is that the Board of Education did not object, right, at the BTA to the consideration of the appraisal.
It was already part of the record. It was part of the record from the Board of Revision.
And the Board of Education assumed that all of that record had
The appraisal was in the record.
But so and the testimony would presumably be in the record.
Right, right. And objection to it at the Board of Tax Bill wouldn't have done any good. It's part of the record, and it was in the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hinkle. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.